I'm Russ White for MSU Today. Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney kicked off the 2018 college football season with his comments on July 23rd at Big Ten Football Media Days in Chicago. Before looking ahead, the commissioner looked back on a successful 2017.
Each year is unique and unscripted. That's the beauty of college football and indeed competitive sports. Who could have possibly predicted the unprecedented success of our teams last year? With its coaches, on the field, in the stadiums, on TV, and in the classroom. I honestly think it was one of the finest seasons in modern football here or elsewhere. And let me explain my thinking, citing some data. At a time when college football stadium attendance is generally in decline, the Big Ten Conference was the only A5 conference to increase its in-stadium attendance. In non-conference play, while playing the fewest FCS teams, the most A5 opponents, the Big Ten won 77% of its games against FBS opponents, the highest success rate in A5 or the FBS. The conference also recorded a 7-1 bowl record against A5 opponents, including victories in the Orange, Cotton, and Fiesta Bowls, all in the same season, a first in college football history. In the first year of our new TV agreements, working with three media partners, Fox, ESPN, and BTN, we recorded the following performances. Four, the top six most viewed regular season games on ABC involved Big Ten teams. Eight of the top 12 most viewed games on Fox involved a Big Ten team. Five of the top six most viewed games on FS1 involved a Big Ten team. And five of the top 10, nine of the top 20 most viewed games across all networks involved a Big Ten team. Our competitiveness, our rigorous scheduling approach, our collaborative network partners, and their skillful production and announce teams all contributed to these remarkable results. And in 2017, the final CFP rankings spoke to the success of Big Ten football. The Big Ten had five teams in the top 21. Ohio State 5, Wisconsin 6, Penn State 9, Michigan State 16, Northwestern 21. After a 7-1 bowl season, these rankings were confirmed. Finally, since this is college football, let's not forget that all of our athletes are full-time students pursuing undergraduate or graduate degrees. Big Ten teams have been ranked first or tied for first in the academic progress rate among FBS conferences in five of the last 6 years, and also ranked first or second among FBS conferences in graduation success rate over the same 6 years. We are pleased with the performance of our students on the field and in the classroom as they experience college football in the Big Ten. I want to say how excited we are to be returning to the Rose Bowl in 2019.
The Big Ten East Division is stronger than the West Division. Does that concern you?
We've had two experiences with divisions. The first one was based on competitive balance over the last 20 years. And to be honest with you, it wasn't received that well. I think the identification by fans, their desire to play geographic rivals and to really fully sort of reinforce the historical rivalries at the end of the day was more important than trying to achieve in any particular time frame competitive equality. I'm not sure that we have a long enough window to really arrive at that conclusion. I think most of us, all conferences except for the Big Ten, have really stayed with their geographic groupings, and I think there's probably a reason for that. I think it probably has to do with the fan base's natural inclination to see, even though conferences are larger, more geographic rivalries. So I think the data is self-evident for now, but I think that you're going to see greater and greater competitiveness. I know in the SEC, you saw a decade of Eastern dominance, and probably the last 15 years or so, the West has been more dominant. So I think you're going to see more and more competition between the two divisions, which are similar,
But I think your facts are the facts for now, and I don't expect that there'll be any change.
What are your thoughts on legalized gambling and its inevitable spread across the country?
We've had a lot of discussion about the changes in gambling that will obviously occur in coming years. A couple things. The first thing I would say is I think we've got, you know, great students playing football. Trust them. They're young. We need to continue to educate them about the challenges associated with gambling and the importance of the integrity of the game. But I don't think that they are more vulnerable today than they were before the Sullivan case. That's the first thing I'd say. Second thing is I think we've got to double down on the educational element. I think we've done that over the years, and we continue to do that. I think that we would prefer a federal framework that either omits college sports from gambling at the state level, and if that's not possible, that there be some standardization of a framework so that college sports, high school sports, Olympic sports, that those categories of sports receive some additional protection. On the issue of player availability, I don't call it an injury report as much as I think about it as player availability. Whether that comes out of an injury or whether it comes out of eligibility or comes out of some transgression of one kind or another, I think we need to do that. I think we need to do that nationally. And I think the reason we need to do that is probably, with the exception of the home field, the availability of personnel is critical to people who are interested in gambling legally or illegally. And therefore, when players are unavailable, we should know that. If they're probable or likely, I don't have the model code, but I do think it's something that we should do and probably should have done it before, but certainly should do it now.
What feedback are you receiving on Friday night Big Ten football games?
Last year was the first year of our new football agreement, and as you know, before that, we had played on Thursdays and Fridays of Labor Day, and we had also played on Fridays of Thanksgiving weekend. So there are probably two additional Friday games. If institutions had not wanted to play at home, that was an opportunity for them to check the box. We don't want to have home games. A number of them did. A number of the schools actually said we'd like to have a Friday game. And so that's occurred in several instances. And so it is an opportunity, I think. There are some conflicts with the high schools, but we've been able to really announce those games in advance. We've been able to work with the high school associations. And I think of the 93 games that were televised, I think there were two Friday games, which wouldn't have been there in the past. And I think they went off fairly well. I can't tell you that I know exactly what the date is on those two games, but we're going to continue to communicate. I don't expect many more than those two additional games, but they will be there going forward.
How do television revenues directly affect the student athletes?
You know, I think that how they've affected our institutions is a little bit different. We probably have, maybe relatively speaking, the most comparable funding from the highest funded to the least funded. But if you believe in college sports, the additional funding allows for the growth and sustaining of equitable opportunities for men and women. It allows for the development of venues, academic support, psychological support, travel. And so if you're a fan of a Big Ten institution, typically fans support not only football and basketball, but to a lesser extent, Olympic and other sports. So I think it allows us to recruit nationally. It allows us to have financial aid packages to the maximum allowed by NCAA. It allows us to have the broadest base programs in the country. We have nearly 10,000 students participating and $250 billion of financial aid. So it simply allows for a platform that provides high-quality educational and athletic opportunities that are really unequaled among the major conferences in the country. Without those resources, we'd be unable to have a presentation, an opportunity set that I just described.
What are your thoughts on the one-and-done rule in college basketball, Commissioner Delaney?
Very pleased to hear that the NBA and the Players Association are seriously thinking about eliminating the prohibition against young people turning professional. That prohibition deprives players of choice. These players should have choice, and there's nothing that would deny them, or we have no interest in denying them the opportunity to go to college or the opportunity to professionalize themselves. We have to figure that out. But we'd love to have them. If they want to go to college and want to play college basketball, terrific. If they're good enough and have a desire to professionalize themselves, that ought to happen. And in particular, I think they ought to have the right kind of representation so they can make an informed decision. But if we all could get involved with them earlier to not only develop their athletic skills, but also to help them understand the choices they'll have, the better off we'll all be.
Would you support players being compensated and profiting from their image and likeness?
We have been involved in litigation over pay-for-play, name, image, and likeness for a decade. We're quite honestly probably in the seventh inning of that. We have a big case in California that will go to trial in September. Win or lose, I think whichever party doesn't prevail will appeal it. I think it'll probably go to the Supreme Court, and that will bring some resolution to the issue of pay for play. Once that is resolved, well, one way or the other, I think that how the student participates in amateur sports, whether they're Olympic sports, collegiate sports, Little League sports, there'll be plenty of time to try to resolve that. But I think it's premature until the fundamental issue of can we make our own rules, one, and two, can we maintain intercollegiate athletics as we have known it over the last 100 years, despite its weaknesses, it has plenty of strengths. There'll be plenty of time to discuss issues like name, image, and likeness. But until the Jenkins case is resolved through the courts, I think we're better off just maintaining, holding our powder on what might occur in the future in that area. I think one of the real misunderstandings, narratives, if you will, is that there's nobody who has, a lot of people have interest, but there's no one who has any control over the relationship between playing professional, when that happens, how that happens, than the Players Association and the ownership. So from a personal perspective, it seems to me like the NFL model works for the NFL and its players. It works for us. There's no choice there, but I think everybody recognizes that most high school players aren't ready to play in college, not even thinking seriously about putting a 17 or 18-year-old onto an NFL team. So there's probably a health and safety issue there. Baseball handles it differently. I think baseball's got 6,000 minor league players. That works for us. That works for them. The NBA has gone back and forth on this issue. But we don't have control over that. We don't really try to have control over that. But when they do things in any that are disruptive, and certainly I think the one-and-done has been to some extent disruptive. It's not good for us, and I'm not sure how good it is for them. And I would like to have some stability in college, but we have no control over that. We have no leverage over that. We have no control over that, and I'm not really sure that we should. Certain of the outcomes, you know, are compatible with what we do, and some of them aren't, and I think that's just part of the reality of the world that we live in.
That's Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney, and I'm Russ White for MSU Today.